Welcome to Drinks and Disney Podcast, where I, Stina, sit down with a friend and have an in-depth discussion about a specific Disney movie while we enjoy 2, 3, 4, 5 themed drinks. Part of the fun is the Instagram, at Drinks and Disney, so be sure to follow us there. Also, please rate us on iTunes and leave a fun review if you can. Enjoy!
Alright, welcome to Drinks and Disney with Stina. Today I'm here with my friend Justin. Say hello, Justin.
Hello, hello.
Justin Marles. Is that right?
That's right.
Yay. Okay. So, Justin, we're just going to have you, like, kind of talk about yourself, what you do, the context of why you're here.
Yeah.
And stuff. And I know you're not really on the social medias.
I'm not.
Because you are a rebel.
I am. I guess I escaped the Matrix, so I now live in the real world.
You're kind of like, the movie we're doing today is Robin Hood. I'm just going to say that right now, so I can make this comparison.
Talking about the Matrix.
Okay. Well, if you think about it, you're like Robin Hood because you're refusing to live in normal society.
That's right.
And you're living in the real world, which is like the forest.
That's right.
And then, everyone else is living in Nottingham and we're all like super depressed about it.
Exactly.
But we can't stop.
You're oppressed by the evil Prince Mark Zuckerberg.
Exactly. He keeps taxing the fuck out of our souls.
Yep.
So that's my little comparison of you to Robin Hood.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I like that. I'll own that.
You're welcome. So, go ahead and tell us what you do, who you are.
Sure. My name is Justin Marles. I work in the animation industry. I work over at Nickelodeon, and on a show called Baby Shark's Big Show.
Yes.
And our Christmas special just dropped, last month in mid-December. So we're out and we're live now. And if you've got young kids or if you just are, a young kid at heart or in your head, you should watch it because it's fun. I'm a production coordinator on the show, so what I do is I work with the artists to basically keep them on schedule, crack the whip, kind of just basically pull the different strings of the show together and get the thing made with the rest of our team.
Awesome. Cool. Me and Justin used to work together on Mira.
Yes.
World Detective.
Yes, we worked on Mira, which is on Disney Junior, and we had a lot of fun getting to know each other on that show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then he left.
I did.
Which, that's fine.
But not because I didn't love you guys.
Thank you. So, yay. Actually, Jared of Princess and the Frog and Lilo and Stitch and Hocus Pocus and my last episode, the Christmas short episode, Fame, was your replacement on Mira.
He was.
So
in a good one, was and is.
We're basically talking to the... I don't want to say old Jared. That's rude. But the old Jared. We're talking to old Jared.
I'll accept it.
How do you feel about that?
I'll allow it.
Okay, good. Like I said, we're doing Robin Hood.
Yes.
And we have because Robin is an archer, Justin brought over some blonde ale.
We are. Saint Cheers. Archer.
Cheers. Clink. And it's really good. It's, like, really light. I like it a lot.
Yeah, it's easy drinking, and I feel like since we're doing a show about Robin Hood, which is set in medieval England, this just feels like a beer movie to
Definitely.
Me.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, because we were talking about what drinks to do, and we were, like, talking about, like, maybe a cocktail or something, but I was like, no, we gotta drink what they would drink. Which is this fancy-ass beer, but their drink would
They would. And we
fancy.
See they drink it. There's ale. Sir Hiss gets... I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but Sir Hiss gets drunk in a bottle...
Does.
In a barrel of ale. So I think, like, this is very appropriate for the film.
Yes. And it's, like, the color is very golden, which is the huge theme throughout the movie, I feel like. Getting gold and riches and money.
Mm-hmm.
So... This is a good drinking at 11 a.m. on a Saturday.
It's like, I haven't even had lunch yet, so I'm just waiting to see how many of these it takes before I really start to really let loose.
Robin Hood, 1973. Wolfgang Reitherman, director. Classic Disney guy.
Yep.
See his name a lot. What else did he... He directed, like, so much.
He co-directed Sleeping Beauty. That was his first big one.
Mm-hmm. He did Aristocats, too, I think.
Goes by Wooly.
Right. Okay, so I saw a list of, like, Disney's old men or whatever, and it said Wooly Reitherman, and I was like, oh, that must have been Wolfgang's son. But it was him.
Was the man himself.
Interesting. Okay, cool. He's very German. Which
Wolfgang.
Wolfgang Reitherman.
I wonder if he liked the fact that the sheriff was a wolf.
He
was aware of that. I'm sure he must have been.
They must have been like, he probably decided that.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, yes. I'm sure he did.
Right? Okay, anyway. It's him. Based on the legend of Robin Hood, yes. Which, you know, that thing. Starring the voice talent of, can you name...
Brian Bedford, voicing our friend Robin Hood. Monica Evans, voicing Maid Marian. We have Phil Harris, voicing Little John. We've got, and of course he did Blue and O'Malley and a bunch of other folks. We've got Peter Ustinov, who voices King John. Mm-hmm. Fun fact about Peter Ustinov, he won an Oscar for Best Supporting Actor in Spartacus. So, hey.
Right, he was, like, one of the only Oscar winners to, like, voice a character back then or something like that. I read, like, something. Also, he voiced King Richard.
Yes. So we also have Pat Buttram, who is the Sheriff of Nottingham. And then his kind of, like, sidekicks or his minions.
Yes.
Who are vultures, George Lindsay voicing Trigger, and Ken Curtis voicing Nutsy. And one of the things I kind of discovered when I was getting ready for today is that kind of all three of these guys are tied in, they portrayed in real life characters that, in live action on television, that were very similar to the characters that they play in the movie. So
mm-hmm.
So the sheriff, Pat Buttram, he played Deputy Pat Buttram, literally, I guess the character was named after him.
Oh, that's hilarious.
For 5 seasons on the Gene Autry show.
Oh, that's so funny.
And Gene Autry, for those of us who know nothing, including myself, about about like 50s westerns.
Right.
Gene Autry was the singing cowboy and like he kind of like was the archetype for that kind of character in those shows from the 50s. And Lindsay, George Lindsay, the voice of Trigger, he played Goober Pyle from the Andy Griffith Show.
Oh, yeah, Goober.
Yep.
Love him.
And Andy Griffith, of course, was mainly about a small-town sheriff in Mayberry, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, Ken Curtis played Deputy Festus in 306 episodes of Bonanza.
Oh, yeah, Bonanza. I was like, what show? Oh, Bonanza. Yeah, that makes sense.
So obviously, like, whoever did the casting was a big fan of TV westerns of the 50s and 60s.
Yes. I actually read a trivia that they, like, were planning on making it a western Robin Hood at first.
Yes. Okay, so I've read this, too.
Yeah.
In all the research I've done, I have seen nothing that... actually supports that.
I think for me, it seems, since you said that, it seems like just because there's a bunch of Western actors that somebody was like, they must have been doing this.
Yeah. Now, there is one kernel of evidence in support of it.
Okay.
And actually, it comes from The Illusion of Life, which is a fantastic book by two of the 9 old men.
Cool.
That I'm blanking on right now. One is Ollie Johnston, and the other, remember who the other one is?
No.
Anyhow, check it out. Illusion of Life. If you like animation, this is the animation Bible. But anyhow, in that book, there is a concept sketch by the character designer for Robin Hood, Ken Anderson, where the sheriff is drawn as a goat highway patrolman. Like, so...
Oh, right. Yeah. Because he was going to be an elephant. He was gonna be a cow.
Well, they switched him around. They switched him around a lot.
Yeah.
For him, I think they're talking about being a goat, but he's portrayed as like kind of like a southern police officer,
yeah.
with like the scary shades and everything. So, That's the only thing I've ever seen that maybe suggests Robin Hood could have been, like, a modern or...
Yeah, but that would have been modern, like, right?
Not modern or, like, something taking place, like, outside of medieval England.
Right.
But honestly, I don't know. I'm going to say, I'm going to fact check this one and say, I don't actually believe that, Robin Hood, there's ever any draft of Robin Hood out there that takes place in the West.
Hot takes. Hot takes from Justin. Steaming hot takes. Well, I think, because I did read that they were going to have him be, like, a cow or something, but because of, no, pig, but because of religious stuff, which I was like, they cared about that stuff?
Wait, you're talking about Fred Tuck, though, right?
I'm talking about the sheriff.
Oh, the sheriff.
Yeah. I read that they first wanted him to be a pig, but because of religious stuff, they didn't. And then they went goat, and then they went wolf.
The pig thing I heard about Tuck. But,
oh, okay.
But definitely, like, there were... there were versions of these characters that were different species mm-hmm, that like mm-hmm. they kind of were playing around with stuff before they settled on what they would originally eventually become and I forgot your favorite, the one you hold close to your heart.
Who? Oh,
Carol Shelley.
Yes, Carol Shelley, my queen.
Voicing Lady Cluck.
Yes, and Monica Evans and Carol Shelley starred in a few things together, live action, like The Odd Couple. They were in The Odd Couple together.
You have done your research.
I did a little.
Yeah, and that actually hit, like, all this kind of that we're talking about hits on something that that I think is worth noting, and that's, like, the idea of using stunt casting or celebrity mm-hmm. voices in feature films and animated feature films, this is not a new thing.
Well, yeah.
And I think it's funny because, like, in a lot of, like, animation chat and when people kind of who are passionate about animation, everybody gets worked up because they say, oh, well, DreamWorks, you know, they're the ones who first really started bringing celebrities to voice famous to voice characters in feature films, and as a result voice actors were put out of business, etc. And you hear things like that a lot, blaming different studios for doing it, but
totally.
But the reality is, like, certainly Disney was doing it very early on. I mean, Robin Hood was not the first time that they cast celebrity voices and used those voices to market the film. So, like, I think, like, just looking at this roster of who's voicing the film, I mean, you've literally got an Oscar winner at the time. You've got people from the top television shows of the 50s and 60s. So, and all these people were then in turn used to sell the movie. And that's how movies are animated movies are sold and continue to be sold. I mean, I think spending some time talking about the voice acting in this film is important. And it's because the voice acting, I think more than many Disney films, the voice acting in this film, in Robin Hood, brings so much to the table. Like the voiceover in this movie is excellent.
Yeah.
Like Brian Bedford's portrayal of Robin Hood, like his voice acting for Robin Hood, that is the character in a way that it's inseparable.
And also fully informed Cary Elwes.
Yes.
For Men in Tights?
Oh, yeah.
Music by George Bruins, which the music, I will make a really quick note, lots of fanfare, right?
Yep.
And Ricky, my dog, was howling. Howling the whole time.
Well, that's appropriate. I mean, it's a movie about anthropomorphic animals, and he's connecting, you know?
I took a video, actually, of him howling at the procession before the archery contest.
Oh, my God.
It's pretty funny. I'll show it to you.
I would love to see
And
that.
I'll put it on the Instagram. So, it was released in November 8th. 1973.
Worthwhile noting, re-released in 82, which is, I think, how some of us might have first seen it.
Yeah.
And then it was the first movie released on Disney VHS.
Yes.
So that was like mid-80s. And so that kind of probably explains why some of us who are, like, you know, our age, and I won't disclose that, but why some of us know this movie so well, even though it came out in 73, is, like, of the re-release, and especially when it being the first Disney movie that came out on VHS. That's a big deal.
That totally makes sense, because I do feel like this is a movie, because, like, there's people who are, like, casual Disney watchers who know this movie.
Yeah.
And I think it is because it was the first on VHS. It was, like, so easy to get a hold of.
And I know that's how I encountered it, is, like, if you were to ask me, like, when is the first time I saw this movie, like, I couldn't say, because
totally.
It just has always been kind of out there.
Yeah.
But if I had to guess, I mean, I never saw it theatrically. I remember renting it on VHS.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We probably owned it on VHS, I'm sure. It was just one of those that was just in the constant, you know, we were rewatching forever. Has a budget of $5 million. Do you know the box office?
I want to guess.
Yeah.
And this is just like original theatrical run box office.
Yeah.
I'm going to guess in 73 or early 74, this movie grossed maybe $25 million. Really? More?
Yeah.
Wow. 50?
Mid. 32 million.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So in between.
Yeah. Which is awesome, because Disney movies back then was rough.
Yeah, well, you know, they were not doing super well at that time. And, you know, they say the rule of thumb is, if you want to know how much it actually costs, you take however much it costs to produce the movie, and then you add another, basically you take that amount and double it for marketing costs. So if they put, 10, 15 in, and they gross 30, they did well.
They still did really well. Yeah, I mean, I think this was this was Dark Ages, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, or about to go into it. So this was the first movie after, the first movie to be truly beginning to end made after Walt died.
Right. Correct. Yeah.
And so I'm not going to say it's Dark Ages. It's too good for Dark Ages. It's too good for Dark Ages. But
personal bias not included.
Very included. Very included.
That's so funny.
But yeah, it was, the studio was certainly a different studio than it had been in the 50s.
Yeah, 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 definitely. Yeah, I think I could agree with that, almost in Dark Ages. Because, yeah, they did really well. I mean, they made, they made a profit on it, so.
Yep.
Okay, so before we get in the quiz, I want you to do a really quick summary.
A movie opens in typical Disney storybook style, just like the fairy tales. We are being introduced to the story of Robin Hood. The narrator, who is a rooster, is kind of telling us about the movie, and we kind of go through the credits at the beginning of the movie, which is a very old school thing. We don't do that nowadays, so we get to meet the cast really fast.
I love the credits. Yes. I love the credit sequence.
So we see all the fun little marches and walk cycles and run cycles of all the various characters, and we're introduced to them. And so then we actually get into the meat of the story. So kicks off with Robin Hood and Little John in the forest, walking through the forest. Oodalali, oodalali.
Right.
Golly, what a day.
Got it.
And from there, we have a great existential conversation. Are we the good guys or the bad guys? Mm-hmm. They're the good guys. Newsflash. So there's this. We then have Prince John. We come across him coming through the forest. Robin Hood realizes a good opportunity when he sees it, and he and Little John dress up as fortune tellers, and they rob Prince John, and he's there, of course, with his counselor, the evil snake Sir Hiss.
Mm-hmm.
So then we kind of switch over to the next sequence, A Day in the Life of the Sheriff of Nottingham, watching the sheriff go on his daily rounds, taxing the people of Nottingham at their 100% tax rate. They apparently get to keep nothing. it literally the most regressive tax rate in history.
I know. I don't know how that society functions.
We need to talk about
how they operate.
From there we kind of transition to the next sequence, meeting Maid Marian, where we get to meet her, and she's playing badminton in the garden of the castle with her lady servant, Sir Clock, Sir Clock. There should be, if there's a lady clock, there must be a Sir Clock.
You would think.
One would think.
I'm sure there is.
There could be. Possibly for the sequel.
She's a savage. I love her.
And then, so, the kids who had been playing kind of end up running into Maid Marian and Lady Clock in the castle garden, and we have just a really fun moment where the kids are not sure what is going to happen, because they have now strayed into the castle. Mm. But turns out everything's fine, because Maid Marian's a sweetheart.
Yeah, she is.
And then from there, we kind of transition into this lover's pining moment, where Maid Marian is talking about her history with Robin Hood. And then it kind of transitions again to Robin Hood learning that there's going to be an archery tournament where he is going to get to, if he wins, earn a kiss from Maid Marian.
Yeah.
And also, I guess there's like prizes. That's the golden arrow, right?
Oh, yeah.
But he doesn't care about the golden arrow.
He doesn't care about the golden arrow.
He cares about the kiss.
Yeah.
So Robin Hood disguises himself to attend the archery tournament. And of course he crushes it because that's what he does. And then, of course, his identity is discovered because he's just a little too good.
Right.
And so Little John takes Prince John, the evil Prince John, hostage in order to get Robin Hood free. But the kind of plan then falls apart because the sheriff discovers the hostage-taking situation. Mm-hmm. And then all chaos just breaks out. It's crazy. There's animals running everywhere.
Fun hijinks.
Fun hijinks. Fun hijinks. Probably not fun if you're Prince John, though. Probably not fun if you're Prince John. It's heavy. It's heavy. So then all the kind of Robin Hood and his gang run off into the forest. They have a wonderful celebration with lots of dancing, but the villains are pissed.
Yeah, they're fucking mad.
So Prince John decides that he needs to come up with some kind of evil plan in order to seek his revenge. So basically, they tax all the villagers who then can't, even more. I don't know what's more than 100% tax rate.
They find it.
Yeah.
Because they do it.
Well, maybe it's like 100% income tax rate. Well, see, a lot of Robin Hood is understanding a lot of to understand the film Robin Hood, you have to understand income taxation.
Yeah, and I want to say this now, even though I have a note for it later. But everyone who is being taxed does not have a job.
Yeah, nobody works.
Nobody works, but they're all being taxed 100% plus.
Well, maybe it's like property tax. Like, so they have 100% income tax rate, and on top of it, they're paying property taxes.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because like the ones that we know have jobs, like the guards and everything, are fine.
Right.
Because they can pay their taxes?
I think because they can pay their taxes.
Or, anyway.
Maybe they're, like, not subject to taxes because they're employed by the government.
That's the problem. They're the only ones employed, though.
I know. Look.
We don't know who runs that pie shop.
That's true. So they're the blacksmith. I mean, the blacksmith is like presumably.
Is that Otis?
Yeah, the Otto. Otto.
Otto.
The
Otto,
dog. Yeah. So there's the some of them have jobs, but most of them.
Yeah, like what are you taxing Mother Bunny for? She's not working.
It's probably her property tax.
Honestly, they should just take her children at this point.
Whoa. Whoa.
<See?
laughs> So
maybe I should be in taxation.
I know. You could be a tax lawyer.
I should be.
So anyhow, they tax the heck out of the community. They throw them all in jail. Super sad moment in jail.
Yeah.
We hear this beautiful song, Not a Nottingham, which I think needs, that song needs some love. Like that's the way I feel. Every day under COVID is Not a Nottingham. That's the soundtrack to my COVID life.
Bless.
But that's not enough. That's not enough. So Friar Tuck, who's kind of one of the supporters of Robin Hood, who, obviously is a friar, he runs the little Nottingham village church.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of gets into it with the sheriff and is thrown in jail. And this is the moment in the movie. And I think there's a moment in every Disney movie, and I'm just going to call it the bad guys go too far, where they just, you can be bad, but you can't be super bad.
Right.
Unconnected to the movie Super Bad, which is great. this is the bad guys go too far. And so their plan is, we're going to kill a minister, a member,
a
man of the cloth.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to kill him, hang him,
so to
kind of flush out Robin Hood and get him to come out and try and rescue him, and then we're going to capture him.
Yeah, that's like full-blown evil.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's not even like you're a government official who's like just following orders. Like,
yeah.
You're like full, you've definitely transcended.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, this is the state attacking the church, which
was
a major no-no in medieval England.
Exactly.
Yeah, this is before Henry VIII. The church was not a part of, the head of the state was also not the head of the church, the Catholic Church, which I guess this is what Friar Tuck Chuck was a part of, was severed at this time. Mm-hmm. And this is the King of England saying, I'm going to murder a member of the clergy because I can't keep my house in order.
Right.
So, way too far.
That is hilarious.
So, obviously, when you go too far, the story gods say that the good guys have to start winning.
Right.
So, so Robin Hood, who's disguised as a beggar, hears of this plan to kill Friar Tuck, and he and Little John engineer the 3 a.m. jailbreak and heist, where they break into the castle, and they manage to rescue all the animals who are jailed. And there's a really beautiful moment here, and this is something that I never noticed as many times as I watched the movie until this last go-around, where Friar Tuck is in jail. He is hung up in chains, and it's only on screen for a moment, but it says he's like etched into his the wall of his jail cell, forgive them all. And he has a Bible at his feet, and it's like he's almost in like the T pose, like, and it's a very like almost like religious moment in this movie. And it's like it shows you like how committed Tuck is to his faith. Like he's just like he's not going to blame these people for what he's doing.
He's like the Christ like.
No, he is. He's the Christ figure, like in this film.
He's the Christ figure. I also love. Shit. I just need to say something about Friar Tuck because I loved him so much.
Yeah.
And it goes along with what you're saying about him being the Christ-like figure. He was the Christ-like figure, but when he got mad, you know, and he was just like at the end of his rope and he got mad because he's not human, but he's human. You know what I mean? So like,
he's as human as a badger can be.
I think exactly. And I think that's so telling of like, he can be the Christ-like figure and still be at the end of his rope, be to a fault.
Oh yeah, and he's for a character like his, he's very fleshed out. Like he's kind of a little mischievous. Like but obviously, like I think he's kind of like the what he's supposed to be is the almost like the perfect village minister or the perfect village priest and or friar, I guess, because that's what he technically is. And that's
I love that like idea of like recognizing that those people who are supposed to represent God or whatever in your community, like making sure you know that they are also men and also or badgers and also like this is a very deep conversation.
Yeah, I mean the way they portray him in the film, certainly he's not a perfect character, but he cares about his community.
Yeah, I love it.
And it's really beautiful. So, so anyhow, he's rescued, which is good. We don't have to see him hanged, which we're happy for.
Yeah, thank God.
And, so from there, like everybody escapes. And then we kind of have this, like, it's like the Deus Ex Machina, I guess is how you say it. Like, but basically, the movie ends. Like, King Richard returns, I should say, as part of the escape, after everybody's escaped, the sheriff accidentally sets the castle on fire, so, like, the sort of, the bad guy's stronghold is burned down, and Prince John and Sir Hiss, they kind of are left without a home, I suppose, but yeah, they're done. So, in the end, King Richard returns, the true king, and kind of just to quote Alan Adale, he returned and he just straightened everything out.
Right.
So we get to see at the very end of the film, Maid Marian and Robin Hood get married, and they kind of like get to go off into the sunset in their carriage, which is beautiful.
Yes, I love a Disney movie that ends in a wedding.
Yes. Oh yes.
I think it's a great way to end a movie.
Yes.
Sorry. Anyway, cool. Thank you for the summary.
Yeah, I felt like it was somewhat disconnected, but like I feel like we also all know the story of just of this version of Robin Hood, but the story of Robin Hood pretty well.
Well, it's funny because like that's how I felt. This is actually only the second time I've had someone summarize. The Tangled was the first time I had her summarize.
Yeah,
and it's just funny the long like. You think you're like, yeah, I could do this really quick. And then, you just go in because you just love it. So you just want to keep talking about it. And that's, like, why we're here.
Well, here's the TLDR summary, like I was saying earlier. It's it's Robin Hood with foxes.
Exactly.
There you go.
Robin Hood's fox. The end. Cool. Great job. That was fun. Okay, so I have a quiz for you.
Hit me up.
Okay. You good?
I'll turn my notes over so that I'm doing this the right way.
It can be open book if you want.
No.
To be fair, because I let other people do it.
No. Open book? Are you kidding me? No way.
Number one. Which string breaks on Alan Adale's instrument in the intro?
It's the bottom string, but I think, but I'm not sure how many strings he has. Like, he's got to play four strings, right? So the fourth?
He has three strings. So, which one do you think?
Bottom string, third string.
Middle string.
Ah!
Oh, no! You'll be fine. You've already answered some of these in your comments, so. See, you already answered this one. Phil Harris, Little John, plays who else in other Disney animated films?
O'Malley and Baloo. O'Malley and the Aristocats.
Mm-hmm.
Baloo in The Jungle Book.
Yes.
And he voiced a bunch of other stuff too.
He does. He's a huge name. What fortune teller props do Little John and Robin have?
Gosh, I mean, they have the glowing ball of fireflies. We need their costumes and stuff.
There's when they're on the side of the road and they're like, fortune tellers, what are they holding?
There's a scroll, like a zodiac scroll that Robin Hood holds. Get the dope with your horoscope.
Yeah.
Which is hilarious.
And then you already said the crystal ball.
Yes.
Yeah. How many locks are on the jackpot chest when Lil Jon says jackpot?
Whew. Two. Three?
Six.
Really?
Yeah, three in the middle and three on top.
Seems overkill. I thought the only thing that was in there was gold coins, from what I could tell.
Yeah, it was. Which is so funny, because it's like, there's other shit.
Yeah. I mean, I would go for the crown.
Yeah. Like, them, like, sucking the jewels out of his rings, I was like, smart. Like, that's, yeah. That's what you should be going for, the jewels.
Yeah.
How much is the reward for the capture of Robin Hood? We see it twice, on two different numbers,
I'm
on
so
two different posters.
I'm so glad you asked this, because I did notice this when I was watching the movie. So, the first is £1,000.
Correct.
And we see that most commonly.
Yeah.
Which, in medieval England, £1,000 is a ton of money.
So much money. And like, also, why even do it if you're just going to get taxed 100%?
I know. Maybe it's tax-free, but knowing Prince John...
There is no tax
exemption. Yeah, there's no tax exemption. There's no... Like, you know he's going to be like, oh... Here's your reward, and I'll be taking that back. Or maybe Sir Hiss would take it back. So it's just like, it's like, so, yeah.
Totally true.
Oh my god. And then, so £1,000, ridiculous. I mean, literally, that's probably $5 to $10 million.
Right.
Maybe more.
Yeah, back then, for sure.
With interest. But then the other one blew me away was in Marion, when she opens her wardrobe.
Yeah.
There's one that's kind of, it's like her, what do you call it?
It's like a locker poster.
Right, like her locker poster.
Yeah,
it's her locker
which
poster.
Which I loved, yeah.
and it's 10,000 ingots. Now, let me get into this. Because
I wasn't sure. I didn't even know what the, like, little symbols were. So, yeah, please get into it.
Let's do some math here, guys.
Yeah.
Like I said, this is important stuff. 10,000 ingots, each... We're going to assume these are gold ingots, by the way, because it's the Middle Ages. Like, what the hell else are they going to use? So, 10,000 ingots. Each ingot apparently is about 420 ounces of gold, give or take.
Okay.
An ounce of gold in today's market is about $1,900. So,
wow.
Do some math, guys. $1,900 times 400
Holy
times
shit.
10,000. It's like fucking $7 billion. That is how much.
And that's
much,
in
today's. That is in today's money.
Yeah.
Which I think if back then, if the US dollar existed back then, it would be much less.
Right.
But the point is, like, in our current currency, it's $7 billion.
Oh my gosh.
So that is how much Prince John hates Robin Hood. Is he's willing to offer a 7.5, like, it's like seven change, $7.5 billion reward. He will make you Jeff Bezos if you can take out Robin Hood.
Amazing. That's incredible.
Sorry. I got excited about that.
No,
I'm so glad you asked.
I'm glad you brought all of that up, because I was wondering. I was like, wait, one says 1,000, one says 10,000, but I can see, like, the differences. Anyway.
Yeah.
Do you know the Tattletale Oath?
Oh. I feel like I know pieces of it. It's like cross my eye, cross my heart and cross my eyes. If I tattletale, I'll die. Something like that.
But the end you have right. I mean, mostly right. Spider snakes and lizard's head. If I tattletale, I'll die till I'm dead.
Okay.
Which is really dark and not, I don't think something that would be in it.
I'm going to get behind it. I'm going to get behind it.
Yeah, I love it. Honestly, I'll die till I'm dead is very intense. And I'm like, that's like a tattoo. That's like somebody's tattoo. I love it.
It's a blood. It's straight up a blood oath.
It's a blood oath.
And you
it's
know, amazing. You know when they're doing it and they look at Toby and they fucking know that turtle's going to sell them out. But, you know, like.
And yeah. Yeah. I would think he would sell me out too. I'd be like, fucking Toby. What color balloon is Hiss in when he's looking for Robin Hood?
Red.
Pink?
I'm going to say.
But that's the same thing. Really? I'm going to give it to you.
A shade of red?
Which is pink. Wait.
I think it appears pink because you're getting the like light through the latex. Which,
oh, I see what you're saying. But, well, did you watch on Disney Plus?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. I was just wondering if our like things were different.
We need a color adjust monitor to figure this out. Let's go to the edit bays.
Honestly, I'm gonna give it to you because, yeah.
All right, Prince John, you just you're taking my points.
You're welcome.
Which can we? Let's hit on this for a minute. Balloons in the Middle Ages. How would they really do it? Sheep's bladders, maybe?
Where does Robin say he will take Marion on their honeymoon?
He says London.
He says three places.
Yeah, London. He does, doesn't he? Does he say Devon?
Mm-hmm.
No? I'm going to say London, the Bahamas, and Niagara Falls. No. I forget the other two.
London, Normandy.
That's a cool historical reference.
It is. It's just like, I don't know, I think like, just when I think of Normandy, I think of World War II. And
yes.
Like, the raid and stuff.
But
so.
Here's the thing, I've been to Normandy.
Oh, okay.
Nice beaches, guys. Like, so, if he's thinking beach vacation, the reality is England has terrible beaches, I'm sorry,
right.
My wife's family's British, like, I can say these things. Like, England has bad beaches.
I can believe that.
Normandy, for that area, nice beaches. Also, short boat ride away. So, it's a good place to honeymoon.
And he says sunny Spain, I think.
Yeah. And again, like, British people love Spain. They all own condos down there.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah. So.
What's the name of the father mouse in church playing the organ? What's his name?
I mean, he's the sexton, right?
Is that his name or is that his title?
So, it would be his title.
Okay, see, I didn't know that.
No, well,
I thought,
like,
his name was Sexton.
No, it's fine. Like, I had a kind of, in prepping for this, I didn't actually know what a sexton did, so I was like, what do they do? So,
okay.
Apparently a sexton is somebody who's a lay person, he's not, basically he's somebody who's not part of the clergy, but they keep the church up. They do, like, the kind of, like, janitorial
stuff.
And they, like, just kind of keep things running in the church.
What's confusing about that is that he's wearing a white collar.
Yeah, he looks like a priest.
He looks like the priest.
Yeah.
So at first I was like, okay, so Friar Tuck is answering to him.
Yeah.
But then it's, like, obviously not that way in their interactions with each other.
Yes.
And
it seems like the sexton is running the church for sure.
Yeah, it's so weird. And then, like, the mother mouse keeps calling him father. Doesn't he? She?
I think she does.
She calls him father.
Yeah, the way they...
That was so
confusing.
There
may be some accuracy issues here. And this is something that like, I don't understand. And, so there's a village church. There should be a priest who covers that church.
Yeah, I'm like, Friar Tuck is not the
He's
person.
A friar. He's
yeah,
a member.
He's
a member of a religious order.
Exactly.
So I guess, can friars step in for priests? I don't
Did
know. I would like to know this.
Go with King Richard.
Could have.
Maybe.
Could have gone the Crusades with King Richard. Or maybe like in a lot of small towns in England, like, and this is actually true today, like, you'll have village churches, but there's, like, a rotating priest who's not always in that church.
Oh, okay.
So maybe, like, Friar Tuck was sort of the guy who was always there and the priest was out of town. Who knows?
Yeah, it's very confusing.
It is confusing.
I'm so confused about Mass.
Anyway. Or maybe just the Catholic Church works different for an animal.
Who knows? Last question.
Yes.
Who catches the bouquet at the end?
Oh, Sister Rabbit.
Yes. I call her Fangirl Bunny.
I love that.
Because I never heard her name. But Sister Rabbit is probably what she's credited as, right?
I think officially that's her name.
Yeah.
Which makes sense
because it's Mother Rabbit. And, yeah.
All right, which makes sense. Who does she marry? We don't see any other rabbits.
Who's his? Oh, yeah.
Outside of her immediate
also,
family.
Also, she's fucking, like, 8 years old.
Well, if you're a rabbit, maybe that doesn't matter. Just saying.
Yikes. Well, I think she probably marries Toby.
Yeah. Yeah, they're kind of like, they kind of have
some
chemistry.
Tension, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I was hoping, because even though I've, like, seen this movie, obviously, like, 8,000 times, I was like, Lady Collection should grab the bouquet.
And marry Little John, obviously.
Yeah, which I was like, why don't they? They have a lot in common. I feel like they would, like, get on, like.
Well, in the dance scene, when the villagers are celebrating, when they're in Sherwood Forest, like, like, she dances with Little John.
Yeah.
And there's a look in their eyes.
They're into it.
Yes.
So if there is a Lord Cluck,
he's out of the picture.
He's out of the picture. Or we have some illicit affairs going on.
Walt Disney always had the idea that he wanted to do a feature involving a fox hero, which at that time was going to be Renard the Fox.
Right.
And so he kind of, like, on and off would have his people do development on the movie. And so in the mid-50s, Ken Anderson, who ended up doing most of the story work and character design of Robin Hood, along with Bill Pete, were doing boards for the film. So I'm really lucky that I was able to get my hands on some of the storyboards from the mid-50s. These were done by Bill Pete, but they show some, just kind of like, they're kind of like loose sequences from what could happen. So, like, here we see, like, Nottingham with, like, posters of Robin Hood all over the place, like, wanted posters. We see part of a sequence where Robin Hood is, I can't tell if he's escaping the castle or if he's trying to enter the castle, but with, like, he's basically kind of slipping past a rhino guard. Here he's giving money to kind of a surprised villager,
cute,
like a bag of coins. And so, like, all these at the time, they thought, they thought that this was going to be not Robin Hood, which is what it became eventually and that we've been talking about, but they thought it was going to be Renard the Fox. So we, like, a lot of these sequences are out of the Renard the Fox story. So there's a part of the Renard story where Renard has been caught and is going to be hung on the gallows.
Mm.
And so we see, like, kind of Renard at the gallows ready for his execution, which is, like, super dark.
Yeah.
And but that gallows scene eventually makes its way into Robin Hood,
right,
where they're going to hang Friar Tuck.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
that,
yeah,
kind of, like, stuck with the movie weirdly, even from the earliest, you know, time they were developing it.
Where did you get these?
I was able to get these. There's a place here in LA called Van Eaton Galleries that specializes in production artwork from animated films. And
cool.
I saw these for sale and I was just like, yeah, like
awesome.
I want these.
Yeah.
What about some other fun stuff? In one version of the Renard movie, he actually dies. Can you imagine Robin Hood actually dying? That
That's
would be like
so
super heavy.
Funny.
But you've got ones where he's like, basically being buried.
It's so crazy.
And he's like,
oh my gosh, his little grave.
His little
stuff.
He's like, he's, yeah. So, and I mean, these are boards that, I mean, I cherish them because, like, these are boards that Disney himself would have seen when he was trying to understand how to make this movie.
Yeah.
And so you even see, like, pinholes in the boards where they would have been stuck. Literally, we use kind of, it's weird, like, when Christine and I, we say the word storyboard, it's sort of like, it's not literal because they exist only in the digital realm.
Digital,
but
yeah,
back then they would, like, straight up, like, tack these pieces of paper to, like, a bulletin board and move them around and experiment with the story beats. And so, so you can see kind of where these things were tacked to a board, and, you know, Walt would probably take a look at it and say, this, I like this, I don't like this, and
They move him around and experiment and like.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So anyhow, yeah, I just feel lucky that I came across these things and
seriously.
And they just kind of show you what the movie could have been, which is really, to me, very interesting.
I like dated a guy named Reynard.
Did you really?
I did.
Was he a fox?
No, he was the worst. But
was he like a bandit? Was he maybe like sly in some way?
He thought he was. It was funny because when I met him, he was like, went by Ray. So I thought his name was like Raymond. But he was like, no, it's Reynard. And I was like, Reynard. And he was like, yeah, I guess there's like a fox or something.
So his parents named him after the character.
Yeah, they named him after the fox.
That's really interesting. Like, I wonder if he ever... like read the stories to know what
actually,
they're about.
I don't know.
What's kind of interesting about the Reynard the Fox stuff is like Disney really wanted to tell that story, but he couldn't quite figure out how to do it. And I know in your research you probably came across that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And but there's a really cool somebody who spent the time to look it up. I'm trying to think of the guy who figured this one out. Sorry. And I want to give credit to where credit's due. So like, there's been some people who've done some really cool research on this who actually have done the like archival digging. And one of those people is this dude, John Cawley Jr., who wrote an article called Disney Outfoxed, the tale of Reynard at the Disney studio.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And so I think he had access to the Disney archives, and Walt used to pretty much have somebody transcribe all his like his notes, and just like you and I do when we're
totally.
In like sessions and story sessions or animatic sessions or whatever. And so he came across Walt saying, I see some swell possibilities in Reynard, but is it smart to make it? Our main character is a crook, and there's nothing about him having a Robin Hood angle.
Oh, wow.
So what I wonder is, in looking at these storyboards and in kind of playing with the Reynard story and making that comment, did Ken Anderson, who was like part of that group who, you know, Ken was the other guy who was boarding this in the 50s. Did that stick with Ken so that when the opportunity to pitch the movie came up in the mid 60s or late 60s?
Yeah.
Was Ken like, oh, okay, well, we solved this problem of this like difficult character, Reynard the Fox, who has some issues, like
wow.
He's not very likable.
That's so interesting.
We just make Reynard Robin Hood.
Robin Hood.
And that's how we get there.
I mean, yeah, I feel like Robin Hood, like, that was a, I think Robin Hood in general is a way to make a thief, like, the hero.
Yes.
Right.
Well, that's the challenge, right, is, like, that's what's unique about this.
Yeah.
About Robin Hood is he's a bad guy who's really a good guy.
Totally.
And not the, I mean, we're used to that now. I feel like,
yes.
like after a billion different, like,
because he's like the first anti-hero.
Yes.
Almost, right.
Fantastic.
So, yeah.
He's the first anti-hero. I mean, and we've become, I think, like a little bit tired of the anti-hero, but in the time, I think that was a pretty novel thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like where everything was about like the respect for institutions and,
it grayed line, like it grayed every, like, you know, that's like the first, like, oh, we're graying what being like breaking the law or whatever means.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so in this like very like hierarchical society, you've got this story out there that is kind of celebrating somebody who's operating outside the rules. And I think that's part of what makes Robin Hood like taking out the Disney aspect. Like that's what makes it a story that we all love and connect with since the Middle Ages. And that's why it's a story we like to go back to, even though we know it.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a classic story. I mean, like, it's still, like, tropey. Like, it's become a trope. Right?
Yeah, but I mean, like, it is in being a trope that we connect with it, right?
Totally,
like, it's because we know it that when somebody puts a unique spin on it, like, in this case, they tell the story using anthropomorphic animals and tell it in the Disney way, like we still want to hear it because it maintains that hold on us.
Right, and yeah, it's a trope for a reason.
Yes.
You know? So cool. Thank you for showing that. And that's all going to be, those pictures of those storyboard pieces are going to be on my Instagram, and I will post them. They're there already. If you're listening to this, go look at them.
because they're there.
Check them out.
You did good on the quiz.
Thank you. I'm still a little upset about missing the one where the kids take the oath, but I'll just
That's
have to live
fine.
With that. I'll have to live with that.
I validate you being upset about it.
Thank you. And I validate your validation.
Thank you. But also, I mean, I would have been, like, so impressed if you had gotten it.
So. That might have been a bridge too far for me. I don't know. Like I will certainly admit, there are people who know movies line by line. Maybe some of your listeners know this movie line by line. I don't have the script memorized, that's for sure.
Would you say that this is your favorite movie of all time?
Oh, unquestionably.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
I love that.
Because this movie to me, like, it's not... The reason it's my favorite movie of all time, like, is for what it means to me personally.
Yeah.
In terms of, like it means... It's more than just a film for me. It's part of the reason I got into doing what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, you know me and my story, but for many years, I was not in the animation industry.
Right.
I worked a completely different job as a lawyer and did that for a long time. And so... you know, as a kid growing up, I always liked Robin Hood and I always liked art. So when I was a lawyer, I started putting together my collection of Robin Hood stuff. And it was always like a point of joy in my life mm-hmm. and something that was really fun. And so when I finally, and so in putting this collection together and kind of, I learned about animation, like
yeah.
how you put together, an animated feature in this case. And so when I finally decided that I wanted to come out to LA and do something different, I said, you know what? I'm gonna just take a leap of faith, and I'm gonna like try to break into the animation industry and be somebody who makes these things, not just be a collector or a fan, but make this stuff.
Yeah.
And for me, like it was like this movie, Robin Hood, that like introduced me to animation and helped me kind of put, I guess, in my head that this could be something that I don't just do for fun, but do for my career.
Yeah.
So that's why for me this movie will always be very special.
I love that. I think that's so cool. And I love that it's, like, a specific thing that eventually, after a long time of you loving it and learning things outside of it from it...
Yeah.
...made you decide to, like, make a life choice. Like, a life change. I think that's really cool.
Thanks.
And also, like, kudos on, like, following your heart.
Thank you. And back at you.
Thanks. I mean, I was never going to be, like, a lawyer, so.
And, you know, it's for a lot of people, it's a great line of work. It's something that I got a lot out of. But I think that you can do many things in your life.
Right.
You can pursue many avenues, and that kind of avenue had ended, and I was ready to do this and to make this stuff. And that's what we do, and we love it.
That's really awesome. We talked a little bit about the opening credits.
Yes.
And I just want to, like, I love them so much. They kind of remind me of, like, 70s sitcom opening credits.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. Yeah.
Yeah, like Love Boat or something.
Yeah.
Like, where it's just, like, here's the song, and then guess who's starring in it? And then, like, you see them either they do the turn to the camera thing.
Yes.
And break the fourth wall, or they're, like... They show action of them. And I think... I love that type of, like, credit sequence. Because I feel like it gets people, like, very into, like... It makes the audience understand it more.
Yeah, it does. And like, I think also it saves some time in exposition in terms of storytelling. So, like...
Yeah.
Because we're telling a story using anthropomorphic animals, like, it's... Maybe for some people that would be slightly confusing in terms of who's who.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
It's just an easy way to like lay out who everybody is and what their attitudes are. And
yeah.
You learn a lot in a brief period of time.
And they are characters that we know, like even back then, because everyone knows Robin Hood.
Sure.
So like, you know, like what does Robin Hood look like? Oh, he's the fox. What does the Sheriff of Nottingham look like? Oh, he's the wolf. You know,
yeah.
Like it's a good, yeah. Good context giver.
For sure. And like, you know, it's weird, like, there's, like, trends in Hollywood, and there's trends in even something as simple as credit sequences, and so, like, if you look at older movies, even back then, it was not uncommon to have credits at the head of the film. Like,
yeah.
Like,
oh,
separate
yeah.
from, like, the way, like, and totally. I agree with you, like, that television stuff, like, is spot on, like that was the way television intros mm-hmm. were. But also, like, a lot of, like, movies back then, credits were at the head, mm-hmm. and now they're at the tail.
Yeah. I think I've sent you, like, a picture of, like, me playing Villainous before, the board game.
Yes.
And, I, like, love playing as Prince John the most.
Why? Why?
Because his goal is so simple. He
yes.
literally just wants money.
Yes.
And, like, all the other villains, they're like, you have to, like, do this, and then this, and then you have to do this, and then
yes.
you're done. But with Prince John, it's just, like, collect as much money as you want, as you can.
Yes. I think that's probably one of his motivations.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he has way more going on.
But one thing about him that I think is really interesting, and it comes out during the archery tournament, is part of what motivate or part of like his needs, he wants to be cool. He
mm-hmm.
wants to be,
mm-hmm.
we were joking about validation, but like he wants to be validated by somebody cool.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways that, one of his weaknesses is when, and this is a weakness, of course, and it's exposed when, Little John masquerades as the Duke.
Yes.
The Duke of Chutney. Did I get it right?
Yeah, I think so.
Sir Reginald, the Duke of Chutney.
Yeah, and then he calls him Reggie, which
Reggie.
Is hilarious, yeah.
You're beautiful. It's so great. but part of the reason that whole ruse works is because as the bad guy, he doesn't just want money. He doesn't just want his enemy Robin Hood dead. He wants the people to like him.
Right.
And I think that's, like, that's a really insightful and true thing about good villains,
mm-hmm.
is they never know they're the villain.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of it, they want to be liked.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I love that part of who he is, because I feel like it makes him more true as a character.
I think bringing up an interesting thing about Prince John and a lot of like the villains in this film, there it's like a study on male sensitivity almost, where
okay.
Well, first of all, I'm just gonna get this out there, Prince John, Hiss, even Nottingham, the sheriff, they are a little gay coded, where they're very flamboyant. And this happened a lot back then, where it was like, they're flamboyant and they're evil. John is very sensitive. He's a very sensitive guy.
He has a mommy. He's a mommy's boy.
He's a mommy's boy. And I don't even think that Disney's, like, saying that that's a bad thing or anything like that.
No, I think it's just a part of his character.
It's just, like, interesting. Well, it's also a part of the king that they based him on.
Yeah.
Had that kind of, like, weird relationship with his parents, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think they're just trying to highlight his childishness, and that this is an impetuous monarch who is really not an adult,
mm-hmm.
and does not deserve to rule, and is kind of a usurper, and that's what he is. He's taken his brother's crown, and so, like, yeah, all these things, all these negative characteristics are partly giving the audience a reason to dislike him. You know? Like,
right.
Like he's the opposite of who we want as a king. Who do we want as a king? We want King Richard, right?
Right. He's like, yeah.
Yeah.
I just think that, well, and then the fact that he doesn't have a mane and he's a lion, that is obviously the visual representation of that.
Yeah, very direct.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that's kind of like part of the fun of using these animal characters is like they're very good shortcuts to telling us about
mm-hmm.
personality and kind of the kind of character we're dealing with. And yeah, and it's funny, if you really look at Prince John, his character design, like he looks like a wildcat. He kind of looks like a puma.
He does, yeah. He doesn't really, he looks like a mountain lion.
Yeah, he doesn't
yeah.
even have like a tuft on his tail. Like he doesn't
yeah.
have a mane. Like, I mean, he's not like any lion that you would ever really
mm-hmm.
see. He kind of looks like a lioness, honestly.
Exactly, which I think is, you know.
And no, I mean, that's
yeah.
probably intentional. Like, I mean,
totally
these are smart people, and they're making visual choices
mm-hmm.
With a lot of intention. And so, yeah, his character design shows us who he is.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, but, like, it's just, like, the looks at different, because it's not even just him that's sensitive. I think Robin Hood shows a sensitivity when it comes to Maid Marian.
Yes.
Little John is very, he's, like, fun-loving, but he's also very, like, calculated, smart.
Yeah. I mean, look at the moment when...
Really good on his feet.
When he thinks his friend's dead. Like,
exactly.
Like, when we think Robin Hood's drowned at the tail end, when he jumps from the castle turret, like, Little John's crying. Historically, the reason that animal characters are used in fables, the reason that they're used in ancient storytelling is in part because they allow us to explore things that otherwise we would not be able to explore.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps that's true with this telling of the story by Disney, which is like they were able to do things with these characters that
mm-hmm.
if they were people, we would not have seen on screen. In terms of like the origins of the story,
mm-hmm.
I mean, like I think another interesting, I guess, like note is the live action movie that I think influenced Robin Hood pretty heavily. And now I've had too many beers. So. Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. There we go.
Oh, okay.
So this has to be mentioned because, like, if you want to know where the vibe of Robin Hood came from, this movie was hugely influential. So I know not everybody who listens to this movie is a huge film buff or into, like, 60s cinema, but anyhow, in 68 or 69, I forget which year, this movie, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, came out.
Mm-hmm.
Screenplay by William Goldman.
Yes.
And so this movie is about two outlaws who are friends running around the Wild West robbing banks. And this movie was huge.
Mm-hmm.
It won 4 Academy Awards.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, like William Goldman, built a career on it. Like he was like known before, but this was his like thing. If you're into cinema, this is a movie that you need to see and that you should know. So anyhow, everybody obviously who's making Robin Hood, who are the storytellers over at Disney, sees this movie and they're influenced by it.
Yeah.
So like one of the not just sort of like the meandering nature of Butch Cassidy makes its way into Robin Hood, but also the relationship between Robin Hood and Little John is a direct pull from
mm-hmm.
the relationship between Butch and Sundance.
Wow, yeah, I never even thought about that.
Yeah, totally. And mm-hmm. and so, like, for instance, like in the story, in the tale of Robin Hood, we always hear about Robin Hood and the Merry Men. It's not just Little John. There's others in his band of thieves, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Willie Rotherman, who of course saw Butch and Sundance, was like, that's what we want to hit. That's
right.
This like friendship,
friendship
between these two outlaws, just these two. And so the Merry Men go away. And so when we get Robin Hood from Disney, we get the tale of Robin Hood, and his bro, Little John,
mm-hmm.
and their exploits as two outlaws. And that's from the influence of Butch Cassidy.
That's cool. I never even thought about that before, but totally makes sense for the time and everything.
Yep.
Prince John and Little John having the same name?
Yes.
Today?
Yeah, nobody would allow that.
Disney would be like, could we, like...
Some exec would be like, it's confusing. It's confusing
let's
for the audience.
Let's call one of them Joe. That's, like, totally a Disney Hollywood kid.
And the executive producer would be like, no, you don't understand. It's historical. It's historical. And,
like,
and the creative exec would
be
like, no.
Confusing for some of our younger audience.
Can we get rid of the text too? Does there have any text in this movie?
Exactly.
Can the wanted posters just be an image of Robin Hood?
Exactly. No text, please. People don't know how to read. Anyway, one funny thing. Just a really fun anecdote. My dad's name is Richard, and my uncle's name, who is his youngest brother, is named John.
That is interesting.
Yeah. It's kind of funny.
Do you think that was, like subconsciously in your grandparents' heads?
I mean, honestly, I wouldn't be surprised.
It's weird. These things float around in the ether, and they
right.
sort of, park themselves in the strangest places.
Yeah, so...
Has your uncle ever tried to kill your dad?
Not that I know of. My Uncle John is always shaved.
Yes.
And my dad sometimes has beard. So, like...
That's insane.
There's a visual comparison for sure.
Yes.
And he is so much younger. My Uncle John is so much younger than my dad that it is, like, a, you know, comparison of, like, youthfulness, youthful, like, inexperience to my dad, who's, like, older and more experienced in life, even though they're, you know, both old now.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's just kind of funny, and it was a connection that I didn't make until I watched this time.
Well, like, it is funny how, like, there's characters in this movie who can remind us of people. Like, for me, it's... my Uncle Mark is Little John.
That's
like,
so funny.
In real life.
Yeah.
Like, he kind of looks like him. He's a big dude with a big belly. He's, like, kind of got that, like, very relaxed, chill attitude.
Yeah.
Like, it's uncanny.
Do you think that... I mean, Little John and Baloo are obviously, like, very similar in most ways.
I feel like Little John's more responsible, actually.
Oh, for sure. Like, I would trust Little John in a
And are we talking Baloo from The Jungle Book or Tailspin?
Oh.
Jungle Book, I know. I would
assume.
But he
doesn't... But the actor doesn't play him in Tailspin, does he?
I am embarrassed to say I don't remember. Phil Harris might have voiced Baloo in Tailspin. I don't know.
I mean, he might have. What was that, like, the early 90s?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He would have been around. Maybe.
Maybe he did.
Apologies to the estate of Phil Harris. If we don't
I'm
actually
so sorry
know.
To Phil Harris's family.
we don't know.
Sorry
his...
for your loss. And
Phil, if you're alive, come hang out with us.
That would be awesome.
Live action Robin Hood.
Oh, right. Because there was, like, a thing about it.
It is supposedly going to be a thing.
Yeah.
It has been greenlit by Disney. I assume to be a D-plus thing on that's going to be on D+.
Yeah.
Live action in quotation marks. We're talking kind of like The Lion King. It's going to be all CG. Unless they've figured out how to genetically engineer people and turn them into...
Do you think that Cats
derailed
it a little bit?
Let's... Funny you should say Cats, because I happen to know that your favorite singer of all time, T-Swift. We're not talking about T.S. Eliot. We're talking about Taylor Swift.
Yeah. I mean, forget T.S. Eliot. He's old news. Old T.S.
Boring. Boring. But Taylor Swift in Cats.
Yeah.
What did you think about that?
Well, first of all, the movie is trash and a half. It's just bad. All of it. I was so excited for it, I just want to say.
Yes.
The first trailer, I was like, holy shit, this is going to be the coolest thing ever. And everyone was like, it's gonna be terrible. And I was, like, such, like, I was, you know, the parade for this movie. And then,
You know who's a big Cats fan?
Who?
Our buddy Cameron.
Oh, right. But he, but...
Shout out to Cameron.
I remember him making comments and stuff about it.
But is Cats, do you think Cats, okay, one, is Cats good, bad, or bad, bad?
The movie or the musical?
No, the movie.
The movie is bad, bad. It's not good, bad.
Well, then that kills my question, too.
Well, what's your question, anyway?
Well, my question, too, is, like, is it possible that if Cats was good, bad, that Robin Hood live action could be good, good?
I think Robin Hood live action could be good, good. I don't think... Well, here's the problem.
By the way, live action, I hate that term. It's not live action, guys.
It's not.
These Disney, quote-unquote, live action movies, there's CG animators and character designers and anything you're seeing on a normal Disney feature film is being done for most of these, quote-unquote, live action movies.
So they're going to be... It's going to be like Jungle Book, right?
Except there's not even a person. I
exactly.
Mean, like, yeah, I mean...
Without humans.
I think The Lion King may be closer, like...
okay.
Where it's an all-CG cast, but...
I think it could be fun. I think it would be funner than Lion King.
Yeah, I mean, look, the trick is, like, the character design, right? Like anytime you're doing you're using crossing animals and people, you run into this issue with the Uncanny Valley, where, like, at least with CG.
Totally.
Like, and that was what Sonic ran into, was just, like, you know, like... You don't want it to look creepy.
Exactly.
Like, I think if there's anybody out there who can do it well, it's the Walt Disney Company. And I think a good example is Rocket Raccoon from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Like, that is he's an anthropomorphic raccoon.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you bind him as a character, he's got appeal in his design.
He's
like,
great.
and we love him. And so I think if they can do Rocket, they can do a live action CG Robin Hood and do it well. But don't mess it up, guys.
I think the thing with Cats is, since we're talking about Cats,
meow.
Different podcast, but here we are.
This should be an entire podcast, a year of talking about that movie, because you could.
I definitely could. But the thing is, I forget Taylor Swift was in it.
I know. But can you excuse it?
Can I excuse her being in it?
Yeah.
Oh, fucking hell yeah. Because she loves cats. She's like a cat lady.
She does love cats.
So, like, if someone was like, hey, Taylor, like, you want to be in this, like, movie where you get to, like, act like a cat and sing?
Sure.
She's like, why not? Sign me up immediately. I totally get it. I think the cast thought that movie was going to be incredible.
They certainly had fun making it.
Yeah, exactly. That's how I feel. I'm like, everyone had a great time. In fact, I would say that the performances are fine. Like, Jason Derulo is great in it. I think he's a great Tim Tugger, I think, is who he played. Yes, Taylor was fine.
Ian McKellen? Wonderful.
Yeah, like, they did fine. Judi Dench was good, except for, like, her monologue at the end, which was, like, why are we still here? But I think everyone had a great time. I think they thought it was going to be something completely different than what it was. And that is why none of them talk about it. And Rebel Wilson is terrible in it. And so is
James Corden. Yeah.
But that's because they were put in there solely because they are plus size actors. And all of the jokes and their only reasons for their characters was to make fun of their plus size. Which is another issue altogether.
Yep.
That we don't have to talk about. Anyway, so when it comes to Cats, the problem with it is the musical is already a trash fire.
Whoa. Speaking of throwing shade on T.S. Eliot.
Sorry, T.S. Not Taylor, but T.S. Eliot. The old one. I just think, that's more actually shade on Andrew Lloyd Webber, though.
True.
Because it's not really the book that I'm having issue with. Well, it's not even the musical I'm having issue with, because I grew up listening to
it. Do you realize that in hating on Cats, you have just angered pretty much everybody who works in theater, and certainly 50% of your podcast audience?
Nah, they're fine.
All right? You guys can handle it? You can take the heat?
Hear the little screams from the microphone?
But we can all agree that, okay, if we're going to get the CG Robin Hood,
it'll be different because Cats is based on human.
No, I mean, yeah, it's not like a CG overlay on people.
Correct.
Like, it's not that. Like,
it's going to be different in a lot of ways.
And the other thing, though, is, like, I don't want a dark version of Robin Hood. I don't fuck this up. Like, don't try to, like, go in some, like heavy direction. You know, this is, I don't need that. I've seen it with Russell Crowe. I've seen it with Kevin Costner.
Yeah.
I don't need it. I want fun Robin Hood. I want Earl Flynn.
I want Robin Hood
Men in Tights.
Earl Flynn is exactly what I want. I want Men in Tights. I want Robin Hood. Yeah. I want the animated Robin Hood. I think, and if we hadn't have gotten Mulan, which was trash, I hated it so much.
Thank you for being honest
about that.
It's
so bad. It's so bad, you guys.
What sucks is I actually know people who worked on it, and I was just like, you want to work on good stuff.
No,
and like,
it's rough.
And it's not their fault.
It's so sad. It's so sad. Anyway, we don't need to get into it.
Yep.
But, like, with Lion King, didn't hate it. Not my favorite thing. But, like, I didn't hate it. Aladdin, I actually super enjoyed.
I
had such a great time. I know we've talked about this.
I am boycotting almost all these.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If we hadn't gotten a Mulan, I'd be so much more optimistic about this. But with, it's,
well,
just
there,
like,
this is my hope is, like, the reality is, like, the Walt Disney Company has never given Robin Hood a lot of love. Like,
correct.
It is not a property that they,
it is more obscure, even though everyone has a personal relationship with,
yeah,
them,
it's strange, like, but it's just not something, it's not something they care a lot about, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And in a weird way, I think that works in the favor of what we're going to see, because, like, my hope is that that will mean less interference from the creative execs, that basically the, and I forget who's the executive producer, but, like, basically whoever's going to be running the show and, like, really putting the film together, like, they'll get to kind of do what they want to do without interference from the company.
Yeah.
And as a result, we'll get something that is fun and lighthearted and, like, different.
Which is how I felt the Aladdin, you know, it was directed by Guy Ritchie. And that's what it was. It was a Guy Ritchie film without the swearing.
Yeah.
Like, it was a buddy comedy, action comedy. The musical numbers were actually the worst part of the movie.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't know what to do.
No,
Guy Ritchie, you're like, hey, Guy Ritchie, can you, like, direct A Whole New World now? He's like, I don't know what to do.
He's like, doesn't it involve there being a shotgun and, like some kind of, like, heist scene?
Yeah.
Is that what A Whole New World's about? Although, for Aladdin, that kind of makes sense. Like, he's a thief.
It would be. But, I mean, I'd be into it. I always lean on the optimistic when it comes to Disney in these live-action remakes. I think that you have a lot of very rabid fans of Robin Hood.
Yeah.
Like, it's kind of like a Treasure Planet type situation where, like, there's some, like, deep Tumblr passion there. You know, like... so...
Don't look too deep on Tumblr for Robin Hood stuff.
Oh, come on! But I do think that, like, it is one of those properties where people do have an... even more of an expectation than the newer films. Than, like, the 90s films.
Yeah, my worry is they're gonna do, like, okay, how do we appeal to, like, the adult audience, right?
Yeah,
like, well,
yeah,
we want to tell a dark story. We want to, like, we're gonna kill off some characters. We're gonna, like, try to make this thing heavy. And it's just, that is not the soul of this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're trying to be true to the original film, then that they should not do that. If they want to tell a completely different story, I'm certainly open to that. But I don't want to see a halfway thing.
Right.
Like, either divorce... Whatever you're doing, you want to use the Robin Hood as a fox and whatnot, that's wonderful.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Go off and take these characters in a new direction, but please don't try to do things halfway and sort of, like, muddle through.
I actually kind of would like it as, like, live action with people.
Well...
Is that weird?
There's a wonderful movie with Kevin Costner you should
know,
check
right?
out
I'm
called Robin Hood,
like...
Princess Eve. There's also one from 1938 with
Earl
Flynn.
Flynn.
So
I
hear they're good.
Is it weird that I'm, like, picturing Alan Tudyk in the live-action Robin Hood?
Well, but that's such a different movie, right? Like, part of what the core of this movie is it does use the animals. Like, and
that's true. You're
like,
right.
The animals, like we were saying earlier, like, they allow you to do things you can't quite do with people.
Yeah, that's fair.
And we saw with Zootopia, like, whether you're talking CG animation or 2D or whatever, like, using animal characters, like, adds a lot to the storytelling. And
yeah.
Even if you want to make it a film that tells a story that's more sophisticated, like Zootopia, like, the animal characters can still be used in really fun ways. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, to me, part of what makes the 73 Robin Hood so good is just the, like, lightheartedness and fun of it. And when, and if you want to, like, just totally tear that apart and do something dark and heavy, that's fine, but that doesn't have much to do with the movie that we watched.
Yeah, it's gotta stay light. It's gotta stay light and frothy. I will bet you right now, no matter what happens, Alan Tudyk will be in that movie.
Okay.
I will bet you these chocolate gold coins.
I will take that bet, provided I can tax you at
100%. Okay. Speaking of Lady Cluck.
Yes.
She's a fucking bad bitch.
She is.
I love her so much.
She is.
She's the Lizzo of Nottingham. That's what I'm calling her.
I feel like I'm blowing out your mic every time I laugh.
She's so cool. I, like, love her so much. And she also has that thing where, like, which is even today they do, because it happens in Brave. Where there's a comedic moment where a character has heavy cleavage.
Yes.
And things get lost in the cleavage.
It does happen.
It does happen as someone who has heavy cleavage. But, like, that's, like, such a comedic trope to this day that they still utilize, which I think is so funny. And I don't hate it at all. I think it's hilarious.
No, I think it's...
Because it's relatable.
Lighthearted.
But, like, it's just, like, so hilarious that, like... Because there's a lot that has been left behind.
There's like multiple cleavage moments in this movie. Yes. There's another cleavage moment where when Robin Hood and Little John are disguised as the fortune tellers, where Little John gets scared and he's like doesn't want to rob the royal coach because he's afraid they're going to get in trouble or get caught, and so he's already dressed in his you know. Dresses this fortune teller, this female fortune teller, and he runs away, has very sizable bosom, let's be honest. And Robin Hood tries to stop him and kind of puts his, and this is where it's like hand paws, I don't know. But like he puts his hand paws to stop Little John and ends up kind of like stopping him on his bosom.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just like they hold that moment mm-hmm. for just long enough for the adults mm-hmm. to like be like that's awkward.
That's a little awkward. Yes.
But yeah, I feel like there's a lot of bosoms in this movie.
Little John makes a very buxom woman.
He does. And you know the Rhino Guards recognize that and
yeah.
and good for them.
Actually, I super love that sequence where the Rhino Guard just notices. Like it's very like obviously male gaze.
Oh sure.
Which
but I mean like intentionally so.
Yeah, like, very intentionally. And he doesn't chase her or anything. Like, chase
yeah.
him, I mean. Like, he just is like, appreciate. And then,
yeah.
like, does his job. Like, and I'm like, all right. I mean, that's fine.
No, there's nothing about, like, based on our current, like, contemporary standards of judgment. Like, there's nothing about seeing that sequence that
yeah.
that seems troublesome to me. Although, like, look, I think you can pick things apart to death. But
for sure, yeah.
But overall, I think it's just very innocent, like.
Totally. Also, like, I notice a lot of the dialogue could be said by very sassy drag queens. Like,
who would you cast? If you had to pick a few, who would you go?
That's what Disney should do. Just drag queen version. Nina West is definitely. I don't know if you know drag queens.
I've heard her name before.
Okay, Nina
I know she's,
West.
She's well known.
She's a very like a Disney family friendly type of drag queen, but she definitely comes to mind for me. There's a lot. Like, I think you could replace everyone in this movie with a drag queen.
But I mean, like, the reason for that, right, is like this is. Especially the villains, but overall, it's very theatrical. Like
it, is,
it
yeah.
like mm-hmm. in compared to maybe like some of the other films of the time, like The Rescuers or 101 Dalmatians or The Sword in the Stone. Some of the things like that were coming out mm-hmm. in the late 60s and early 70s. Like this movie, like it feels like it could be a stage play.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, definitely for sure. It does. It could translate really well on the stage.
Broadway. Okay, so if somebody's listening from Disney, I guess like what is their arm that does Broadway stuff?
I think it's Disney Broadway, right?
Sure. We're gonna call it that for sure.
Yeah.
If you're listening, Christine and I want to pitch you Robin Hood for Broadway, and maybe we'll do a Cats thing, like in terms or maybe more of a Lion King thing. I feel like Lion King for Broadway did that well with animal characters.
Yeah, definitely.
So we'll work on
the
costuming.
A big lots of room for more like character development in a stage play, I think, even more than another film.
Okay, so if we do Robin Hood the stage play, who's doing the music today?
Okay, but Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Ah! I just don't know if he's the guy that would
I
be the right pick.
The only person I can see him writing a song for, one song, is for Robin Hood. Just like a...
Like a Hamilton-style breakdown?
Like a Hamilton rap of like, I'm Robin Hood. Da, 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 da. Like, that's the only thing I can see him writing.
I mean, maybe like if it were the Merry Men. And like,
yeah.
like maybe like that's... that like. With the stage play, you bring the Merry Men, and
yeah.
you've got like a whole bit
mm-hmm.
with like the Merry Men doing a whole Lin-Manuel Miranda thing.
Taylor Swift can do the music for Robin Hood.
Okay, Taylor Swift.
Yeah,
I feel like Taylor Swift's Robin Hood.
I'm so into it.
And she can play herself since she's already played characters with fur. Like apparently, like
exactly.
she'd be open to Maid Marian.
Yeah, I think she'd be great. I think she'd write an amazing Robin Hood musical.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, there
it's
we are.
It's decided. And now, everyone, 3 years from now, enjoy the debut. of Taylor Swift's Robin Hood.
If you subscribe now, we will let you buy tickets for $100, and that is a bargain.
Yeah, because this is going to be like Hamilton.
Because let me tell you, they're going to be flipping them for $500 online.
Yeah, I love this idea. I'm very into it. What do I have here? Oh, I thought it was interesting the way that they took the concept of taxation, but like made it understandable for children.
Yeah.
We've kind of touched on a little bit. It's a very adult thing, but, like, it's such a huge part of the movie.
Yes.
But you, like, understand it. You're like, oh, yeah, you have to give money to the government.
Which, when you're a kid, you're like, what?
Yeah.
You mean but, I like, don't get to keep it?
Yeah, but you, like, get it, because you're like, oh, the...
And if you live in California, you get to give a lot of money to the government.
When Robin Hood and Little John first appear on screen, they wander upon a fallen tree which bridges a river.
Yes.
Each cordially insists that the other should cross first.
Yes.
This is a friendly subversion of the traditional Robin Hood narrative in which Robin Hood and Little John meet at the same way, in the same way, but they fight over who should cross.
Oh, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
I have never thought about that.
Yeah, isn't that cool?
And, like, that's, again, something about this movie is, like, you know, look, we don't, because we know the story of Robin Hood, we don't have to get the backstory. Like,
true, yeah.
like for the most part, we take the characters as a given, and as a result, like, they can,
mm-hmm.
they can kind of take us off in other directions, and kind of circling back earlier to, kind of the kind of movie this is, like, it, you know, we talked a little bit about the influences and how it's more, it's kind of episodic, like, it's doesn't involve this, like, complex storyline, and part of what that what I find interesting is, like, just the way Disney has told their movies generally has changed over time, and this movie kind of reflects that.
Yeah.
Where, you know, originally, like, and working in animation, like, Christine and I deal with this on the day-to-day, but there's kind of two ways of creating a story, crafting a story in animation. And the first is board-driven, the second script-driven. So with the board-driven, whether talking television or feature film, like, basically storyboard artists, who are people who, like, draw, essentially, like, almost draw, like, a comic of the movie in advance, mm-hmm. those are the people who are given the power to, like, kind of set the story, essentially, like, decide what happens from scene to scene and how the characters interact and things like that. And then after, with a board-driven movie, after the board artists are let loose and they do their thing, believe it or not, after that, then they give that to the script writers, and the script writers will come up with dialogue for those scenes. Mm. But ultimately the story is driven by visual artists.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with script-driven stuff, whether it's movies or television, the script is the first thing that, the kind of the first pass at the story that happens. And, you know, the script is written, and, like, in a lot of ways, that's kind of, like, traditional Hollywood, or that's, like, Hollywood now, is, like, everything's script-driven.
Uh-huh.
But, so that's another way of, and kind of the predominant way right now of telling these stories. So, what's, back in the day, everything at Disney was board-driven. So, like, the stories, were told in almost, like, a different way, with almost, like, the emphasis being on the visual and not on the gags and on the personality of the characters, like, in terms of how they interacted on screen. Like the plot and the sort of, like, whether the plot hung together, or, like, all these, like, complex threads of what was going on, there was just less attention to that. Instead, the attention was, like, what was visually funny, what was, like, comedic in the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And so Robin Hood is a board, ultimately, I think, a board-driven movie. And, like, and as a result, like, it tends to connect very well, I think, with young kids.
Mm-hmm.
I think the gags in Robin Hood, the, like, visual gags are super strong.
Yeah.
Like, the personality of the characters comes through in a way, I think, that sometimes can get lost with script-driven films. Like, it's a different kind of storytelling, and you can compare it with Zootopia. Like, look at the complex plot in Zootopia. Like, some
right.
people have compared it to Chinatown,
yeah.
which is, like, this, like, very, like, all these conspiracies mm. and all these things that are happening at once, and we kind of get the backstory to all the characters.
Huge world building.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Board-driven stuff is, in a lot of ways, less about maybe world building and more about sort of just, like, immediate humor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And again, like, that, I think that's fine. And mm-hmm. we forget that that's a good way of storytelling too, especially in animation.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly Walt Disney and the Nine Old Men felt like that was a good way to tell stories.
Yeah, yeah.
So, so it's the way we make these animated features has changed. And so today when we sit back and we're like, oh, you know, like Robin Hood, it doesn't have much of a plot or mm-hmm. you kind of like crack on it. We're sitting there and judging it from a way of making movies that is different from the way they made these kinds of films back then. I don't know. Some people say it's better. I in terms of like script driven stuff versus board driven stuff. Like I think for animation, board driven stuff is fantastic. I prefer it. Again, I think that's kind of heresy nowadays. Like both the shows you and I work on are script driven shows. Mm-hmm.
But I think it's dependent on the story you're telling.
Yes, and that is important. Yeah. It's like what kind of story do you want to tell? I mean.
Because something like Zootopia could not be told.
I think it would be very hard to do it solely through boards and or kind of letting that be the mm-hmm. genesis for it. So, yeah, and the other thing about script-driven movies is, I mean, I do think you see more of them even in animation because with the sort of, you call it like the corporatization of entertainment, it is easy for executives to read a script. Mm-hmm. It is much harder for them to look at boards or get a pitch from board artists and spend $100 million on a movie. So, like, and this is not my idea. Like in, have you seen on D+, Waking Sleeping Beauty?
I haven't seen it yet.
Okay.
I need to watch it.
You should watch it.
Yeah.
They interview Jeffrey Katzenberg, who basically ran mm-hmm. Disney in the 80s. And he was brought in, he was coming, he was a Disney outsider, he had not done a lot of stuff in animation. And so they interview him about coming into Disney, and what he said is, like, he didn't understand the board artist stuff, he just wanted to read a script. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of paraphrasing what he says in Waking Sleeping Beauty, but the point is, like, as Disney changed and became, and executives, creative executives took more of a role in the company, like, and they wanted to see scripts, they didn't want to see board pitches.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think that has, as a result, like, has reshaped the kind of movies we get from Disney. So we're probably not going to get another Robin Hood type movie or any of the early type movies that were made under Walt, because literally the way these stories are put together has, it's different now.
Even live action, I feel like, wasn't Hitchcock, like, board driven almost?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, Hitchcock used boards very heavily in this mm-hmm. filmmaking. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yay, board artists. We love you, and we love our writers, too. We love everybody.
We appreciate everyone who works on things. It's really hard to do, and so...
It is. You guys don't know. 24 frames per second. Try it out someday.
Why don't you try it? Anything else from...
Don Bluth worked on Robin Hood and didn't like it.
Well... Don Bluth didn't like Disney.
You know what? He directs community theater in Arizona now, so... Sorry, Don.
Because he was like... Oh, my God. Okay.
Throwing shade on Don Bluth.
I mean, he gave us a lot, right? He gave us a lot of, like, classic shit when we were children.
I actually love Don Bluth. And yeah, I think it's and I think it's funny that he didn't like it.
I think it's funny that he constantly was trying to take on... the Disney formula and never did it as well as them.
Ooh, I disagree.
For what? For which?
I think the American Tale series is amazing.
Oh, American Tale. But, like, that's, like, not really Disney format. Do you think? I think that's
Well, more... I mean, like, you're talking about, like, feature film animation using, like, cast of animal characters. That's pretty Disney.
I think... I count American Tale as different. I'm thinking of, like, Thumbelina... Penguin and the
okay. Look, did he have some stuff that wasn't top notch? Yes, but we can also talk about Black Cauldron. So,
no, we can't talk about Black Cauldron. If you want to talk about Black Cauldron, you can go listen to my episode about Black Cauldron, which was rough to get through.
I mean, Rats of Nim is amazing.
It is. No, I love Don Bluth for sure. I just think
I feel like you're backtracking. I feel like you're crab walking on me.
Okay. Go listen to my Thumbelina episode. Because I have some Drinks and Not Disney episodes. Okay. I did do Thumbelina.
Somehow Drinks and Bluth doesn't have the same...
No.
But the point is, he didn't like Robin Hood and he's wrong.
Well, okay. And the bigger point is, like, sometimes Don Bluth is wrong about shit.
Yeah.
And that's okay. we still love him for the shit that he gave us when we were small.
Yes, he does. And you know whose favorite movie Robin Hood was? Or at least what he enjoyed working on it? Ollie Johnson.
Ollie Johnson.
One of the original Nine Old Men. And he said that it was his one of the movies he enjoyed working on most.
I love it. I love that they just loved what they worked on.
Yep.
I think that's important. Especially as someone who works on anime. It's important to love the thing you're working on, which I do love.
How about Robin Hood borrowing? Because, like, I feel like there's a lot of people who crack on Robin Hood because they're like, correct. Oh, it steals from everything.
Yes, because of the animation sequences that are repeated in Snow White and Aristocats.
Yeah, let's hit this. Let's hit this.
Okay, I will say, until I did research for this specific episode, I was like, they're trying to save money. But apparently that's not even the case. It was just like Wolfie. Wolfie was just like
Wooly.
Damn.
We're conflating the two.
Yeah. Wooly was just like, I just like that shit, so I want you to put it back in.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, I don't think they're like, besides maybe the timing of the sequences, I don't think you're saving a ton of time redrawing that stuff because like they've got to still like put those characters on model and they've got to like adapt the layout. Like basically, yes, there's kind of reuse going on there, mm-hmm. but I don't think they were saving a lot of time. They just liked the shots. Like they just felt like they were strong shots.
I read a thing that said that like everyone thinks that, it was Disney being lazy, but in fact it cost more money for them to, put the characters over that stuff.
Yeah.
And redraw it.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me in the least. And mm-hmm. But also, there's nothing wrong with reuse animation. Animation is insane. To actually mm-hmm. try to do anything animation is...
Right.
And anything animated is so much work. If you knew, you wouldn't do it.
It's already a miracle.
Yeah, it's already a miracle, guys. So if they want to cut a few corners here and there, give them a break.
Exactly.
And I know also there's some, like, I'll call it, like, fake trivia out there that about Robin Hood's costume being based on Peter Pan, which came out in the 50s.
Mm.
Let's address this. Let's address the fox in the room.
Yeah.
Like, we were talking about earlier or later, I don't know, depending on how Christina edits. the Robin Hood started off with Reynard the Fox.
Right.
They were always playing around with the idea of Reynard, and there was a, at the time, like in the like mid 40s, there was this very talented illustrator named Keith Ward, who did a book of tales called the Scandalous Adventures of Reynard
mm-hmm.
the Fox,
mm-hmm.
or this, and did some wonderful illustrations in this book, and with characters kind of like anthropomorphic animals dressed up in medieval attire, and so. When I believe when Ken Anderson and Bill Peet were storyboarding this out, they kind of basically like they just used it as reference to board
yeah,
out some ideas,
sure.
kind of
yeah.
like what I was showing you. You know, they didn't have any character designs out yet. They were just kind of using this as like
mm-hmm.
like a quick and easy way to like explore story ideas. And so way down the road when Ken Anderson sold the project and started doing character designs, like he still had this in his head. And if you look at Robin Hood's character, like his actual like garb, his clothing, kind of his general look, it really seems to be very similar to the illustrations in
Definitely.
Keith Ward's book, which predated Peter Pan and all that stuff. So listen, if there's anybody out there who needs to get kind of some like an unsung hero of the Robin Hood movie, it's this illustrator Keith Ward. Also, I'm going to give a shout out to the person who kind of figured this out. It's a storyboard artist working today. His name's Will Finn, who figured this out.
Thanks Will.
So yeah, like you know, Ken Anderson did some amazing character designs based kind of that I guess were inspired by Keith Ward's illustrations, and that's how we got to these like really lovable characters. And like they say in art school, if you want something to get noticed, you make it big and you make it red. And that's our buddy, R.H. Robin Hood.
Hey, Keith Ward's estate.
Don't start trouble. Don't start trouble, Christina.
Hey.
Don't start trouble.
All these estates.
We should add a disclaimer that this is just my theories on these things and me repeating other people's theories. I do not speak for any studio, especially the Walt Disney Company. We're
unaffiliated.
Yeah.
Cool. Yes. And there will be pictures, a couple pictures of that book on my Instagram. So everyone take a look. It is kind of uncanny, the similarities.
Yeah.
So, but yay. Okay. Anything else?
I have had so much fun.
Yeah.
This has been a real pleasure. Yay. And I just hope you guys, like, after listening to this, like, you want to go see the movie again and you mm-hmm. see it in a new and fun and different light than maybe
I
you did before.
I think they will.
Hope you enjoyed the episode. Quick disclaims. Drinks and Disney is not affiliated in any way with the Walt Disney Company. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes and follow us on Instagram at Drinks and Disney. Special thanks to Grace Sy for our music. Cheers, my Disney dears.